All right, it's DT Systems, dog tested and dog tough. You know, we like that dog in them, baby. We've been using the H2O 1820. Over the last several months, we've been playing with this unit. Our friends at Standing Stone Kennels, Ethan and Kat, they've been using it for years, and we've been playing with it. We really like it. I think for the dog trainer, the hunter, and the guy or gal who's training their dog to get ready for duck season, we'll really enjoy the 1820. Super reliable, super consistent, great unit for you and your dogs. H2O 1820. Dog tested, dog tough. Gunner Kennels, baby. Hashtag man's best kennel. Well, it's also now hashtag man's best food crate. It's freaking raccoon proof. You can't get into this thing. Your dog can't bust into the lid and eat all the food. Trust me, I know Memphis has done it in the past. She looks like a blown up pumpkin. Boom. But not anymore. We've got the Gunner Kennel food crate. It's easy to pack, easy to store, keeps food dry, which food's an investment, man. That Purina, baby, it ain't cheap anymore. So keep it dry, good, all that stuff, easy to pack, easy to store. The Gunner Kennel food crate, slide into DMs if you'd like to learn more. Force fetch, what is it? It's super intimidating to so many people, yet it's not that difficult. I built a step-by-step process that helps you understand it. You and your dog can be successful in it, and it takes the intimidation away of the process so that you and your dog can get to your goals. That's what it's built for. Let me teach you how I do it so that you and your dog can do it. Different breeds, different personalities, problem solving, and more. Check it out. Links in the description. The Force Fetch course. Baby. What's going on, everybody, and welcome to our vacation episode. It's Kevin and Bob sitting in the basement of a nice little lake house on Brantingham Lake in the Adirondacks of New York. We decided to do a quick Q&A, get one out to you guys this week, have a little bit of fun, and
a little bit something different.
A little something for you. But we have a bunch of good Q&A questions coming up soon. But first, a little touch of our Yukonuba. We just had Sam and Ryder puppies go home. They looked really, really good. We suggest their puppy formula 1 to 2 years old until they're mature. But those pups loved it, ate it up, firm stools, looking good, healthy, great energy, all of the above. So if you've got a young puppy or a litter or whatever, check out Yukonuba's puppy, large breed puppy formula. Next up is Gunner Kennels. Kevin, have you checked out their new color?
Yeah, it's like a hunter green. Ooh. Handsome.
Sexy, baby.
Very handsome. I think Bird would look real good in one of them.
I know. It almost makes me wish I could just have a different array of colors of Gunners. I mean, you got, it's called Biomeadow. Then you got your tan. And then you got your
tan camo.
Tan with camo door. Yeah, that's what we have.
Yep.
And then they've got the charcoal gray, slate gray,
like gunmetal. Gunmetal, I think.
Yeah, super sexy. But this new Biomeadow, it's kind of a special edition, short run. If you want it, check it out. Get it now because they are not going to last long. So if you're interested in one of those, shoot us a DM on Instagram at Lone Duck. We'd be happy to get you into their new color, Biomeadow, baby.
Bayou? Bayou? Northerners.
Yeah, we're Yankees. I thought it was Biomeadow. Like, you just say it really fast and you sound Southern.
Bio. Biomeadow.
I'm not sure.
Traeger Grill.
Next up, Traeger Grill. Smoke them if you got them, baby. Welcome to the Traeger Hood. Man, I made, on the little Ranger that I've got, I made some sausage. Daddy, would you like some sausage? Name that movie if you're from the early 90s.
I can't.
I know. It's because you're too young for it. I was a little young for it. I probably shouldn't have watched it when I was that young. But
what movie?
I think it was Freddy Got Fingered.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't think I've seen that one.
It's either that one or Road Trip where, like, what was it? Adam, shoot, I can't think of their names now. Yeah, this is how long ago it was. But anywho, Daddy, would you like some sausage? We cooked some sausage on the Traeger. It was delish. And we were out training. It was Friday or Saturday. Saturday morning. Yeah, Saturday morning it was. And we had that thing smoking right out in the field. It was cool. So if you want, check it out. Traeger Grills. Baby. Next up, Dogtra. We actually were doing a little thingy-dingy for their social media this morning, talking about ideas, why e-collars are a great training tool, little tips and tricks, blah, blah, blah. And it reminded me of a story of my Edge RT where about 4 years ago, I had lost it in a field for several months, found it, charged it up, and that sucker still works to this day. That is durability, if I've ever heard of it.
I read a thing in I don't remember what magazine it was. It might have been a Ducks Unlimited or something like that, where they had a quote from Mike Ritland.
Oh, yeah.
He does some Dogtra stuff as well. Cool dude. Check out his podcast.
Mike Drop.
Yep. And he just said, you know, we use this on our dogs over in Afghanistan. Like, that says enough.
Yeah. No, I get it. Way cooler than mine. But anyways, thanks, Mike. But anyways, if you'd like to learn more about the Edge RT, that's more of the pro model. It's three dog unit. I use it literally every day. That's what, you know, I use and a bunch of my other pro buddies use. That's on our website, loneduckoutfitters.com. Look it up, Edge RT, ladies and gentlemen and babes. Next up is us, loneduckoutfitters.com. We've got a ton of great products on there, guys. Like we just said, with the Dogtra Edge RT, we've got a line of Dogtra products, Momarsh products, Gunners Up Wingers. We do sell a lot of this stuff that you need and ask us about to train your dogs and to get ready for hunting season. And also those sweet Unspoken Bond t-shirts and hats and whatnot. So if you enjoy the podcast, if you enjoy the content that we put out and you want to support us, we appreciate it. LoneDuckOutfitters.com. We thank you. And last up, Waypoint Outdoor Collective. They're the host of our show, the analytic tools, but they also have a family of podcasts and social media influencers as well. And if you'd like to learn more about homesteading and fishing and hunting and whatnot, check out Waypoint Outdoor Collective. Kevin, are you ready to get into the show, buddy?
Do we want a quick talk about how you've been on the struggle bus fishing this week?
Struggle bus? Bro, I've caught more fish than everybody else here.
I know. You definitely have caught more fish than I have, so I shouldn't bust your balls, but I think I have an obligation to do so.
It's true. Now, listen, we aren't slaying any fish here, folks. We are using bobbers and worms and catching bluegill in the last half hour of our night, but I've caught a few bass on multiple different rigs. But, I mean, really, we are struggling. We just are not catching fish.
There's just nothing in the water is what we've learned.
Yeah, but I have caught and helped the young little, my nieces, catch, along with my mother and Carrie, some bluegill. And there are some slob bluegills out there. So it's been fun.
It has been pretty cool. That was Mom's first fish. Did you know that?
No, ever?
Ever. Full on casting out.
Oh, yeah.
Doing the whole deal. And same with the girls. So it's pretty cool watching them catch fish for the first time.
They've caught some fish, but this was like they reeled it in. They did the work. So, yeah, no, it's been fun. It's been a nice little break from the dogs. It's been a nice little family time. Like, I just don't get enough of it with the hours we put in and the traveling and just the responsibilities of 24/7 care of live animals. So to trust my man Jimmy back at home to do obedience and run marks and keep the shop running, it is very nice to be able to get away for 4 days or whatever and just have a little family time, decompress, rock a podcast, get some things in order business-wise that are hard to do when you're running and gunning.
Speed, yeah.
Right. So very cool. And we're about to kick right back into hunt test season. So I'll be on the road again like every weekend in September. except for the last weekend of September, which we will touch on with our seminar that you all have been asking about. And so stay tuned towards the end of the show. We'll talk about the seminar and what you want to do and how we want to get it done, but it'll be the last week in September. All right, Kev. Kev's going to read off some reviews because that it is fun to hear some feedback, and Kevin's got two or three that are really good.
Yeah, so I don't know how much time, well, I know you don't have much time, to read through all of the different reviews that we get, but I do.
Nice, thanks.
I hit every email, so if anyone does have questions or concerns, loneduckpodcast@gmail.com, I will answer. I had some really great feedback. Someone wrote in and said that they're more of an HRC guy, love reading and listening, all the different content that we have, so shout out to you, Midway. Midway.
Nice.
Great name.
Shout out, Midway.
CT Dobbs, been binging the podcast recently. Love it. Super informative.
Thank you, my friend.
We had another really good one from Game Hog, so that's a good, great name.
Big old hog.
Big old Game Hog, who said, before I start my review, I'd like to give a shout out to Gunner Kennels, Dogtra, Yukonuba, Traeger, and Waypoint. And then went on to say a bunch of nice things. So appreciate it, but definitely
he did his own
one
intro.
Of the best. Yeah,
nice.
His own little sponsorship intro.
Nice.
And then had another good one to finish it up here, saying that the person had been binging and then was re-binging the Force Fetch episodes,
yeah.
Saying how helpful that was, and that without us really knowing has been a huge influence on their dog.
Cool.
So that's pretty cool, man. I mean, what do you think about that?
No, I first off am appreciative of everybody taking time to leave a review and subscribing and doing the stars. And that Force Fetch, the two-parter, seems to be, like when people send me direct messages on Instagram, that seems to be one that has really helped a lot of people and probably one we need to, like,
maybe we
revisit or repost or whatever. And I have even, I've adapted and tried some new techniques with Force Fetch since the 9 months ago or whatever we put that sucker up. So maybe we'll do another one. But Force Fetch it's not rocket science, but it is intimidating. And every dog responds to it differently. And everybody has this, like, emotional baggage surrounding Force Fetch. So to hear that it's helping people is why we're doing the podcast and why, you know, you guys supporting us by listening, subscribing, reviewing, grabbing a Lone Duck hat or a t-shirt and, you know, all that jazz, all that kind of support is what makes this possible. We are going to be advancing and working on a video series for YouTube in the next, our next 6 month goal is to help boost that. So maybe we'll do some more Force Fetch there, but yeah, no, appreciate all the reviews and people taking time to give them and give a crap. So
yeah,
makes us feel real good. All right, let's get into some questions, buddy.
Yeah, let me pull them up here. So
can you put your computer up on the table so you're not half leaned over? That might work.
I could, but I got stuff everywhere.
Yeah. Well, let's get it situated. So these are Instagram questions that we had come through, like that little sticker thing, like ask us something. And so these folks sent in their questions or direct messaged us their questions, and they're pretty poignant. So let it rip, buddy.
So we had, we've been talking a lot about T-Pattern recently, and our pal Talenberg wrote in, thank you for sending in a question. He's got a lab going through T-Pattern and says, occasionally while sending him from the home plate, he decides to head to the over piles instead of straight back to the back pile. What do I do?
Yep. So this is one of two things. One, you're not lining the dog up properly. So their head and body is pointing towards the over piles and you just aren't recognizing it. And or maybe they're lined up right, but their head keeps looking over there and not looking straight out to the back pile, and you send them and they go to the over pile. So that would be kind of on you. If it is not on you and they are lined up properly and they are looking out good and they make the decision that those over piles are closer and easier to get to, then the first correction I would make is no here. Bring them all the way back to me. I would walk up, you know, several steps, sit them down, and send them to the back pile again. Now, if they do it again, I'm going to know here with some collar correction, heel, sit, good right there, back, and I'll move up. So I'm making it an easier decision for them to go to the back pile by moving closer to it, and in turn, those over piles are getting further and further away, like out of their peripheral vision. So that's how I would solve it. And it's pretty common, and it's usually common in what I would consider like a lazy dog with T pattern, like one who doesn't really like doing it. They're doing it because they have to, and they're like going through the motions or blah, blah, blah. Like they just, it's kind of an attitude thing. And so they're like, I am still going back, but I'm going to go to the closest back as I can. But it's wrong. Go straight. Now, I would caveat that and say, like, make sure you got your white poles at each of the piles. Make sure that you're in shorter grass and maybe even, like, mow the strips of to the back pile and to the over piles. So you've got it pretty black and white, and there's no gray area for them to, you know, do that. But, yeah, the quick answer is no here. Bring them back. Move a few steps closer to the back pile. Send them again. If they do it again, no here with e-collar pressure. Move closer to the back pile, sit, and send them again. So great question, pretty common, not a major problem. You'll fix it just doing that stuff.
Nice. Had one come in from our pal, Bearded Southern Gentleman. If you could only have one kind of dog, hunt test or a duck dog, what would you want?
So if I could only have one, so that means if I only had a hunt test dog, I couldn't hunt with it, and if I only could hunt with it, then I couldn't run hunt tests. I'd probably just do hunting dog because, I mean, that's why we do the hunt. Like, it's the chicken or the egg. Like, I would rather hunt with my dog than go and run a hunt test any day. But if you look at it maybe another perspective, hunt test season is all year long. Hunting season is only X amount of days a year, and how many times can you get out during hunting season? So, but I think the reason why we train and hunt test is so that we can have a better hunting dog and a more comprehensive hunting dog and challenge us and our dogs to be a better hunting dog. So the whole goal revolves around them being a hunting dog. So I'm going to go with, I would rather have a bad to the bone duck dog, waterfowl dog, upland bird hunting dog, and hunt anything I want with it and have it do whatever I want. That's what I would have. Next up.
Gentleman's Way Jake has a really good one here. I have a young dog through force fetch, T-pattern, and running simple seasoned level blinds. Last week, she seemed a little bit out of whack, wasn't marking well, wasn't taking casts. So he simplified by using white buckets and poles, but she'll just line them. She's not really changing direction like she should.
Gotcha. So this is a wicked common problem, and I have this discussion with everybody, right? And this was a common problem that I did way back in the day. Everybody thinks short blinds are easier. They're not as far. Or the dog will break down and start hunting too soon instead of keep driving back. Well, it's just like the idea would be how we talk about extending the distance dogs will mark, where you help that dog, maybe you throw him another bumper in route, all sorts of ideas to extend marks, but everybody like goes back. Like if they learned that lesson about marking, they don't apply it to running blinds. And so they'll just do 60 yard blinds, and now the dog starts breaking down at 40 yards and won't keep running a straight line, or they lose confidence and won't handle. So that's what this dog is doing. The dog is chopping up a blind and won't cast because it's basically afraid to make a mistake. So every time in a young dog who's learning blinds, every time you blow that whistle, imagine that's a correction to the dog. So if I'm going through a field with zero understanding of where I'm going and you blow a whistle, Kevin. Let's pretend this is me and you.
Yeah.
Right? Like we
That's kind of how I'm envisioning it in my right. head. Because the whistle almost is a correction. It's like in the sense of it's letting right. me know, like, no, you're still doing it wrong.
Or, well, yes. So let's pretend that me and you, I'm the dog, you're the handler. Okay? You send me out to no man's land. And I'm just doing it because I'm trying to please you and you've told me and showed me how to do it. Right? And you just send me out. So I start leaving at a jog. Okay? So I'm just jogging, basically blindfolded through a field. You know, there's different terrain. There's different land features. Oh, here's a log. Here's a, you know, a pile of deer poop. There's all sorts of things in my way. And I'm just like blindly running out there waiting for you to tell me where to go. Okay? Tweet. And you give me an angle right back. Okay?
Yeah.
You with me?
Yeah, I'm tracking.
So I turn around and start heading that way. And then I fade back over here and I'm like jogging and I straightened back out and I didn't go very far on my angle. Tweet. Now you yell at me and you like make me go really fast angle right. And now I'm like, oh God, okay, oh, that wasn't right. And I start to go and then you tweet and then you tweet and then you tweet and then you tweet and then you tweet. And I'm like, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Bro, whoa, whoa. Where do you want me to go?
Right. I'm trying. You just got to settle down.
Right. And so this dog has no idea where you want them to go. If you have a short blind, 60, 80 yards, 40 yards, 60, like a seasoned level blind is like 50 yards. That dog, I could throw a football and hit that blind. So you're telling me I've got to get that dog that has no idea where it's supposed to go to stop and cast on that short, tiny little blind and have it be confident. So if they're 10 yards off, that's big time off on a 50-yard blind.
Yeah.
If they're 10 yards off on a 150-yard blind, that's still online, basically. They're yeah. still going in the good direction. So what I'm trying to say is easier blinds actually are longer because you can allow that dog to take a cast and carry a cast. And if it's offline a little bit, who cares? Let them roll and build confidence. Then you stop them, and then you get them to change direction, and then they build confidence going in that way. So you're thinking about it like weaving through a field. Just weave through a big field, back and forth, sort of staying on that line loosely. I don't ever stop a dog, give them a right over until they're on the line, stop them on the line, give them a straight left back. You just weave through the field, and as that dog progresses, that weaving becomes tighter, 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 tighter.
So the zigzagging back and forth
is actually a good thing.
Yeah.
But if you do it in a short, quote-unquote, seasoned level blind, that's way too short, and so your dog can't make a... Basically, by the time they turn and change direction, they're already wrong. So you got to blow the whistle again. And then they change direction again, and you got to stop them again. And then you got to change direction and stop them again. So in a young dog who has no idea where they're going... Every time you blow that whistle, you're saying, nope, you're wrong, nope, you're wrong, go this way, go this way, go this way. That's why when he uses a white pole and a white bucket, the dog lines it because it's a no-brainer. It's 50 yards away. It's right in front of him.
Right.
I would say take that white pole and bucket and put that sucker 225 yards away and run your blind. The other thing you can do to build confidence, remember distance erodes control. So with a young dog who's learning how to run blinds, kick them loose on back. And follow them out into the field. So they're running and you're behind them, maybe at a brisk walk or a light jog. Tweet. So now instead of being 100 yards away from you, they're 60. And then you cast them and follow them out. And now when you stop them, instead of being 100 yards away, they're 60 yards away. So you kind of maintain that short distance between you and the dog because you're following them out. So you're maintaining control on your casts. And getting your casts. Now, let me back up for a second. If I give a dog a right angle back and they do a straight left over, that's wrong. I'm going to stop them. I'm going to cast them again. And I'm going to get them to go where I want them to go. But if they go anywhere in that general direction of an angle right when they're learning how to run blinds, I'm going to let them do it. And then because we've increased the distance on blinds and made them further, it allows that dog to carry that cast and be more confident. Does that make sense, Kev?
Yeah.
I mean, we jumped around a little bit, but...
No, but I think it makes sense that just take your time, put kind of like put yourself in their perspective. If you're being tweet, you're kind of at some point you're going to throw your hands up and be like, what do you want from me, man?
Yeah.
So just
screw this.
Them,
I'm not going anywhere. I don't know what you want.
Exactly. So let them go. And okay. All right. We're rolling. We're moving. All right. Oh, go this way now. Okay. All right. Yeah. Now we're going. We're moving. And you can create that zigzagging effect and you'll get where you want to go. Just be patient.
Yeah. Again, to maybe highlight the areas is actually increasing the distance to the blind is going to make the blinds easier. I still use white poles and buckets and whatnot, but I increase the distance. Follow them out into the field. So you decrease the distance to the dog every time you blow the whistle. But maintain control, but the dog still has to run 150 yards. The more times at a young dog with a young dog, the more you blow that whistle, the less confident they're going to be. So if they go in the general direction and they're trying hard, let them carry it. Let them carry it. Now stop them. They cast, let them carry it. Let them carry it. Now stop them. Instead of tweet, 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 they blow up. They quit trying. They start coming in. They lay down. They run away. They do all sorts of dumb stuff
right. Because
you screwed it up. So there you go.
I think one thing that we actually talked about a lot with Ethan when we were showing him how to run blinds was like be confident and assertive with your whistle.
Oh, yeah.
Like
you mean it, baby.
No.
Tweet.
Bam. So it's a sharp noise. They're really far away running through brush. You got to make sure that they hear it. Is there a whistle that said that you would recommend?
I mean, I use the Sport Dogs P-less whistle. And yeah, to your point, Kevin, you know, blow it like you mean it. They're $6 whistle. Get your money's worth. That dog, when they're running hard or swimming hard or in water that they're splashing and running in, they better hear that whistle. And instead of just get a correction, if they can't hear you, then it's not fair to, well, they blew off my whistle and you start shocking them. So make sure they hear you, blow it like you mean it, and sharp blasts. All right, Kev, what's up next?
Yeah, here's a good one. Robbie Good was wondering how many Bush lattes we brought on the trip.
Not enough. We had to restock.
Also, we were in Bush Country. We'll probably send out a picture with this.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Was funny. We pulled up and there was a billboard saying that Bush hunters or something like that.
Yeah, welcome hunters. And it was a big Bush light with a big old deer on it.
Yeah, it was great.
Nice.
Brownie fishing had a good two-parter. So I'm going to do this one slow. What order do you collar condition and what things do you teach first? How do you know if you should focus on one thing or if you should focus on multiple things during training?
Okay. Collar conditioning. I think we all trainers kind of do it the same but different. And I know that's a weird thing. But how I collar condition, I like to collar condition to the hear command first. So, and I'm not going to get into how to do it. I'm just going to say what I do and blah, blah, blah. So the hear command is collar condition first. Then once they're pretty solid with that, I'll do heel. Because heel and hear are very similar. So hear means come to me now and get to me. And that turns the pressure off. Comfortable or uncomfortable, comfortable and praise. So they learn to turn that pressure off and get praise by being with me. Then heel in the dog's brain is staying with me and walking nicely, gently on a leash. I've already taught them. With a choke chain or a slip lead or whatever. I've already taught them, even with treats, I'll teach them to stay with me, and now I'll overlay that instead of popping them on the leash. I'll use a collar correction. So now we've understood coming to me turns pressure off, staying with me turns pressure off, and then I'll do sit, where once the butt hits the ground, that turns the pressure off. I'll do, some dogs, a lot of dogs, I'll do place. So I'll send them to a place or a Momar stand, and that turns the pressure off. And now I'm getting them to do things that they've already learned. So they already learned place with treats. They already learned heel. They already learned here. They already learned sit. They know what those things mean. Now I overlay it with collar. Now, the second part of his question is, can you do multiple things or just one at a time? When I'm collar conditioning and I'm doing a session of X here, I'm not making the dog do anything else. So I'm working on, in that 5 or 10 minutes, here. Not here, then sit. Not here, then heel. Not here, then do 10 other things. I want that dog to think about one thing, and that's getting to me quickly and turning that pressure off. If you start adding too many things, then they are going to, it's kind of like what we just talked about with running blinds. You're going to start confusing them. You're going to take confidence away. They're going to start getting nicked for all sorts of commands or stimulation for all sorts of commands all at once, and they're not going to understand what, when, how, and why to turn that pressure off. So focus, when you're collar conditioning, focus on one thing first, get that solid, then do another command. So simple, right? So for instance, what would be wrong is here, stimulation, place, and then they get to you, pressure's turned off, now place, stimulation. They get on place, good. Now here, off of place, calling them off a place, here, burning them off. Like, that's bad dog training. You're overdoing it where the dog is just getting stimulation for multiple things and not figuring out how to turn that pressure off. Worry about one, then worry about another, then worry about another, and get them all smooth, and then you can start, the dog is going to understand what you're asking of it, and that pressure means I better comply quickly to get the desired response and praise and all that jazz. So like for instance, if I'm like out with my dog and I say here, and really I want him to place, I could give him a little nick on here. He comes into me, good dog. All right, now place. And then he doesn't do place right away, and I could nick, get him on place, but you're not overdoing it right away. When that dog's learning collar conditioning, focus on one.
Got a good one from Josh Good. So it's interesting. So he says, I used Woe on my GSP when doing marks, and now she'll sit whenever he says Woe out in the field.
Gotcha. All right.
What do we do?
So this is where I differ from a lot of the short hair folks that I train with. There's several commands and things that they do differently than I do, and this would be one of them. When I tell a dog sit, I mean sit. I don't mean sit and stay or sit and whoa. Just sit, and then I will release you on your name to go pick up a mark. A lot of pointer, NAVDA, whatever, will like tap them on the back of the head and say fetch. I don't do that. I send them on their name because for me, fetch means pick that thing up right now, this instant, or don't drop that thing. Like grab it and hold on to it. So if I'm sending them on a mark where they're supposed to use their eyes and their nose and go and search for something and bring it back to me, if I tell them fetch, they're going to be looking right near my feet, right near me. They're going to be probably mildly under stress, like, ooh, I better go get that right now. And they're not worried about using a little bit of comfort and be relaxed about it. So I send dogs on their name. So those are a little differences in what I do, but long story short, to answer his question, whoa means stand still. Point a bird, stand still. I teach whoa before I teach sit with pointers that I've trained. I don't need them to sit. I need them to just not move and stand still. So now when you start integrating doing retriever marks and having them sit, I just tell them, I teach them sit after whoa. I make them sit. I do not say whoa in any way, shape, or form in my retriever work. Sometimes that dog, after the bird is like launched and they've whoa'd and stood still and it's launched and I go and like pet them to release them, they'll sit. Really not a problem, but not what you want. And it's all it is in that dog's brain is confusion. So here, my breakdown is, A, not my expertise. I would point you to our friends at Standing Stone Kennels. They've got a ton of videos on this stuff. They are more apt with the pointers than I am, but for me, I would say this is probably not a problem. And the only reason it would be a problem is if your dog smells a bird, points a bird, and sits before you even get there and flush it and stuff. If that's the case, then I would completely stop telling that dog sit. I would completely change my approach to everything, and I would rework woe and simplify and make that dog stand still and stand. So that's kind of my thought is generally it's probably not a problem unless it's doing it when it should be standing still pointing. After that bird is gone and flush and whatever, you know, less of an issue. Yeah, that's that.
But definitely check out Ethan and Kat. They have a ton of good content on standing stone kennels. They'll be able to help you out. Tree Hill Labs. We've actually mentioned this a couple times. Do you use white stick men where you have your wingers, or do you have your bird boy wear white? You've mentioned white buckets, white poles. Like, can you maybe give a little bit of when to use what?
Yeah, so the white poles and white buckets is for handling and running blinds and stuff. The white stick men or having your bird boy wear white is good. Basically, field trialers will have their bird boys or wingers have white on them so that at 350, 450, you know, 250, 100 yards, all these variations of distances, the dog will look out, see white, focus in on that location, and then mark the bird and go and get the bird and stay on that side of the gun. And it's pretty advanced type of stuff, right? Your average duck dog guy, you know, probably not a care in the world about this. But for those who are trying to elevate their skill set, elevate their dog, you know, play field trial games and stuff. So what do I do? I intermix them. So I don't just run hunt tests. I don't just run field trials. In fact, I really don't run field trials, but I still use white poles, or excuse me, stick men or my bird boy wearing white. If I've got really long marks or challenging cover and marks and blah, 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 or I'm working Quinn and Ellie and Memphis and Cruz on some like stuff that we could see in an SRS or in a field trial, whatever, I'll definitely have them in white to help the dogs pick out the guns and, you know, run that distance and blah, blah, blah. I would say I don't do it like our friend Adam Campbell that came on the podcast. He probably is similar to me. He runs way more hunt tests than field trials, but he still does. He runs a lot more field trials than we do and has had a lot of success in it. Even for his hunt test dogs, he'll have his bird boys wear white. And it's just to help the dog pick out where those birds are being thrown from and look out confidently. And it's all about confidence and marking. So I see benefits. I would say I probably do 50-50 or even less than that, where maybe 2 or 3 days a week we'll do white bucket or white stick man and Jimmy wearing white. But, you know, if I'm throwing some real monster stuff and trying to teach, then they're definitely seeing white out there. Yeah.
Final question was also from Tree Hill Labs. Are we still planning to do a seminar?
Right. As we alluded to earlier in the podcast, yeah, we're going to do a seminar, guys. And I don't even really want to call it a seminar. It's like a educational, fun, pre-season, pre-hunting season.
Tune-up
slash Q&As slash, you know, what does your dog need? What are you struggling with? We're going to limit it to 15 dogs. We might have some opportunities for people just to be like bystanders and hang out and watch, but not bring their dog, but it's going to be 15 dogs. Now with the old COVIDs, there's going to be some disclaimers. You can't be from certain states that New York won't allow in, or else you won't be able to get a hotel, for instance. But if you're from states X, Y, and Z, and you're okay to come into New York, we're going to rock this thing. Next year, with hopefully no more COVID, it'll be looser, but there'll be more information like ASAP this week, but it's September 26th and 27th of 2020. It is going to be all day Saturday with a barbecue on the old Traeger Saturday night and a bonfire. Then Sunday, we're going to do a half a day. We're going to provide a lunch. We're going to do like a live, probably something live on Instagram or Facebook or podcast with Q&As during our lunch break. And it'll be fun. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing this for. It's not, you know, whiteboards and whatever. It's
let's be out in a field.
Let's be out in a field working. And if you have a six-month-old puppy, you know, we're going to have a description of what you're looking to get out of the day and a half. Bob, what you're struggling with, and we'll set up how we can help you. But then we've also got the master dog who is having a hard time picking up, you know, blinds under the arc, and also getting ready for hunting season and wanting to honor other dogs. And so it's going to be a cool mix of everything. It'll be fun. There will be more information ASAP on how to sign up, where to send money to, and then like a Survey Monkey thing where you can say a nice paragraph describing you and your dog and what you want to get out of the weekend. And then we will kind of cater it to everybody to make it fun and exciting and real lone ducky. It'll be good.
Make sure you get what you need out of it.
Yeah. It will be first come, first serve. So I would say as soon as you see that thing and you want to come, you better get in and get on it. And then we'll help find hotels and everything like that. So, all right, guys, as always, thank you for tuning in. Please do me a favor. If you enjoy the content we provide here on the podcast and at Lone Duck on Instagram, do us a solid. Head to LoneDuckOutfitters.com. Check it out. Grab a hat. Grab a t-shirt. Show a little love and support. Maybe you need an e-collar or you've been wanting a gun or kennel. If you get them through us, we truly appreciate it. Thank you very much. Until next time, we out.
Hey, join our community. If you enjoy the show, if you enjoy our YouTube, if you enjoy Instagram, it's like buying me and Kevin a beer. Join patreon.com/LoneDuckOutfitters. The link is in the description. Click that link. Join the community. We've got tons of great videos, tons of great content, and you can ask me more questions. So join it. Enjoy it. We did it for you, and you're helping us produce a show. So thank you so much to that community. Get in, get out, let's roll. patreon.com/LoneDuckOutfitters.
Hey listeners, Nick Larson here, host of the Birdshot Podcast. As fans of this show, you may be interested in the conversations on the Birdshot Podcast, where we discuss all things upland hunting, from upland birds and their habitat and conservation to the shotguns, bird dogs, and gear used to pursue them. Whether you're a seasoned upland hunter or just getting started and wanting to learn more, I interview a wide range of guests, each with their own unique perspective and valuable experience to share. If you're on the hunt for more upland hunting conversation, please consider subscribing to the Birdshot Podcast today. We'll be right back.